building up a generation. Plant seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real money radio, a future you can hold.
Good morning and welcome to Real Money Radio. I'm Tanya Escabel here with my co-host Roy Matlock Jr. We started this show this year together to teach you how to build financial wealth around real estate. It's always been where my pillar of business has been, and Roy is wrapping that around today with what does retirement paychecks look like with all of his financial wealth, you know, looking at financial planning, looking at your Social Security, looking at the way you're investing in your 401k, your IRAs. Also, we'll talk a little bit about how to utilize that with mortgages and real estate. That could be a paycheck for you too. So excited to talk about all your retirement paychecks that maybe you're not aware about and our passion together. We came together, known you for years. You've had your show. I've had my show and said, hey, let's put this together because building wealth includes all of those pillars of business and opportunities and wealth strategies. So Roy, we're going to take it away with you today with retirement paychecks, starting with paycheck number one.
Social Security that no one understands and how that works. And, you know, I do a lot of business. I always tell people when it comes to money in the age group for me is from birth to after death. And so we get people that accumulate money in the early stages. I have that, you know, I call it the magic of $500 a month, to where if you get a draft set up early on for $500 a month into investments, you set yourself up for life. And then you have that Social Security, and people are always saying, well, I wonder if Social Security is going to be around. You know, that's it's always their wonder. And then the next thing they wonder is, when should I draw it? You know, which is something that it's pretty simple to understand. I'm going to give you that detail. And then
did they change the age group for Social Security now?
Well, every year, if you every year, if you take your year you were born and the birth year, basically, the birth year tells you when you get it. And so someone that is, you know, our age, I'm 65. You know, mine is like 66 and a half. But someone that is in their 50s now, it might be 67. Okay. And so if you go to the SSI.gov, it's going to tell you, you know, when your full Social Security age is. But, you know, and there's always exceptions to the rule, but there's a couple things you need to know. If people, if you're not working, you can draw your Social Security around 63. And what happens is as long as you're not working, you can draw it. And I always tell people, draw your Social Security as early as you can if you're, as long as you're not working. You know, if you're working, you get penalized. Generally speaking, when I will advise people on their Social Security, I'll tell them if you're working, you need to continue till you get what's called full Social Security. And what full Social Security is that you're not penalized for having earning money. And we take and set up, I'll give you one story. I had a client that first thing I always do with people is I ask them, I said, do you hate your job? Or, I mean, can you bear it? And, you know, if you, some people, they get sickness on Sunday night thinking about Monday morning. And, you know, I like what I do. You love what you do as well. And so we're not thinking that way. But if you're in that situation and you just can't stand it, well, just realize that when you start drawing money on your investments, on your Social Security, you're going in a different direction than if you're not drawing and still adding. All right. So I had a client that had about $400,000 and they were wanting to retire. He had already retired, and he was drawing Social Security. And I said, well, it's like driving two directions. If I'm going 55 miles an hour north and you're going south, we're traveling 110 miles apart. And that's, if you start drawing now, you're not going to have, and quit working, you're not going to be contributing, and you're going to be pulling. So it's two different directions.
And what does that 10 years look like? What does that next 10 years look like?
And so we went from 400,000, and she's listening, I'm sure. At least she listens to my show. She may have not found us yet. And she became obsessed. She's like, I'm going to keep working and I'm going to fund my 401k. And then she hit full Social Security age and we took the Social Security and we did that and we started saving the Social Security and was putting $30,000 in the 401k, plus the Social Security. She was like 67 or at the time, like 60, maybe four.
Okay.
And the difference is now like a little over 4 years later, we got $1 million.
Wow.
All right. And the reason is we saved the Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So every time it comes in monthly, we draft it. All right.
And we invest it.
And then we take the 401k mm-hmm. and we've invested that. And then the market over the last stock market over the last several years has gone up. But here's the rule of thumb. If you take it early, you might get $1,000, meaning mm-hmm. like 63. If you take it at full Social Security age, you might get 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may get more or less, but this is kind of the – and if you wait till you're 70, you get about 2,000. So people say, okay. Well, I'm going to wait until I'm 70. Well, if you take the difference between the 67 and the 70 or 66 and a half, that $500 extra you're going to get is because you gave up 3 years of the full Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that check. And so typically it's about a 10-year catch up. So if you wait till 70, you're not going to catch up until you're almost 80 and you could die.
Yeah.
All right. And I see that where people.
Well, that's what the system is probably hoping.
Yeah. It's designed. Well, Social Security is a life, is an annuity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it's a government annuity that says we're going to pay you as long as you live and then we're going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if you're married, what's going to happen is if you both are drawn Social Security and say one of you are getting $2,000, the other one's getting $1,500. So you're cruising along at $3,500 between the two of you. And then someone dies. Well, most people think, well, okay, well, they died. You know, that happens. Well, what happens is you were getting $3,500. You lose the smaller one and keep the larger one. So now that widow that walks in, you're looking at, not only did they lose their spouse, they also lost 50% of their income. So they may have gone from $3,500 down to $2,000,
mm-hmm.
and that's the way it works. And so your Social Security is just one element of a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, like 70% of the population, that is their paycheck. You know. So anyway, so that's kind of – so what I always tell people in closing on Social Security is we – if we're still work as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working and you hit full Social Security age, let's go ahead and invest that
mm-hmm.
and, you know, crank up your 401k. As you can do a little over $30,000 if you're over 50 and add that to a Social Security, maybe it's $30,000. Now go save $60,000 over 3 or 4 years and now you're cooking because you didn't take the money.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't start to run on what your lump sum was to begin with. And now you're saving money and it changes everything. Typically, it'll pretty much, if you do that plan over about a 5-year period, most people can double their lump sum.
Let me ask you this question. What about self-employed buyers? Because I'm a W-2, even though I'm 100% commission, I've always been W-2.
Right.
So mine's automatically taken out. So what would you recommend for
self-employed? I mean,
does that go into what they file into the IRS?
Yeah. So basically what happens when you're working as a W-2, you're getting matched. Mm-hmm. All right. So they draft your Social Security up to the limit. I don't have the limit right in front of me, but you max out and then it just goes down to about, I think it's 2.9%. So you're paying half of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the employer's paying half of it. When you're self-employed, you're paying all of it.
Okay.
So it's as much as 15%.
So they're still getting it and they're still building it.
Yeah, it's the same. The only thing that a lot of people don't realize when they're self-employed is when you're making $100,000 a year, you know, that Social Security is like 15%, and so it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you make $300,000 a year, it drops down just to like 3% mm-hmm. if you include everything. Okay. So you can max out you know, what you're putting in. So, yeah, the self-employed, you know, has to pay. It's the exact same plan. The only difference is you're paying both sides of it.
Got you. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So another question on Social Security, and I'll throw a wild card in there. What about if you become 100% disabled before you're able to draw on it? How does that affect
Well,
that?
So Social Security disability will pay a portion, and then that's why what will happen is – I always recommend people that that they look at disability income insurance. And then that way, I've got an attorney referral that what happened is he had a disability, mm-hmm. and he fought Social Security, and now he has just a practice that fights for people to get it. You know, disability income is one of those products that very few people have. A lot of time, it's special if they're self-employed.
Does it take away from your total?
Yeah, you can't make a profit. And so the idea is, and when you're buying disability income, you can buy just like I'm hurt, mm-hmm. okay, and I can't work, disability, but that doesn't fix someone that's, say, a surgeon, mm-hmm. all right? So a surgeon, I have a friend of mine that he did surgeries, and he was doing, and I didn't realize that, like, if you're doing open heart surgery, it's like it's a physical deal, mm-hmm. and it got to a point where his back, he couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so he had disability income to replace what his skill set was. Mm-hmm. All right, okay. It's a difference. So
that would be the recommendation on that.
Yeah.
And then still get your Social Security.
Yeah, you would still apply for Social Security disability, but typically you'll buy a disability income plan. It'll pay 60% of what you earn. Okay. So the whole idea, anytime there's insurance is called indemnification. Mm-hmm. All right. So indemnification means bring you back whole, all right, not move you to a better level. Otherwise, everyone would be filing, you know, my back is hurting. You know, right. Now I can make 200% of what right. I used to earn.
Right.
And so the whole idea when you buy insurance, even on life insurance or health insurance or any insurance, the idea is to indemnify the loss. And if you go buy life insurance and you're making, say, $50,000 a year, you can't go buy a $10 million insurance policy. They underwrite you on financing, on your financials. Mm-hmm. If you are buying health insurance, you can't make a profit on getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I did see on one of those crime shows. It's just, I don't know.
A documentary?
Was it
a real one? Or
a real one, where they were paying this personal injury attorney was paying these people to drive their car and get hit by a semi-truck.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm like, I'll take that job.
You're going to take that risk.
Yeah. So they literally were going out on the interstate and stopping in front of semi-trucks and getting rear-ended. Okay, and then the attorney would sue the company, and they started looking at it. The insurance company's like, hang on a second, this is the same lawyer in the same place.
And the same cases over and over.
Yeah, so anyway.
You should have got a little creative maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I'm like, I'm going to be a crash dummy?
Yeah.
All right, the people were doing it. I mean, it'd be two of them in the car. And I was like, all right, that's a different one. But anyway, that is, that's the only time. And even then, damages on personal injury start with what did you lose? And then they add pain and suffering. So if you're making $30,000 a year and you get hurt, you don't get the same settlement as someone that's making $200,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole idea on it. So
very interesting.
Yeah, so.
All right,
anyway,
check us out.
Yeah, so my name is Roy Matlock Jr. I'm here with Tanya Escobel. You're listening to Real Money Radio, and we've got more to come. We're going to be talking about all the paychecks that you could possibly receive while in retirement. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Real Money Radio. I'm Tanya Escobel here with Roy Matlock Jr., my co-host, and we are talking about retirement paychecks. If you're just now tuning in, we are here every Sunday from 11 to noon, and we were just talking about Social Security being paycheck number one. We'll be moving on to paycheck number two, 401k and IRAs, but I think you wanted to add something
for
Social Security.
Yeah, one last thing. You can go to SSI.gov, and you can fill out you register, and it will tell you what your benefits are, what your full Social Security age. It really gives you a pretty cool deal about, you know, how much you get at this age, at this age, at this age, and so on, graphs and the whole deal. So I would encourage anybody that hasn't done it, go, you know, check that out. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the website's pretty good doing that. Yeah.
And then if they want to talk to you in depth about it, they can go to realmoneyradio.info.
Yeah, yeah. And both of us are there at realmoneyradio.info, which whole idea is, you know, I think that website now, you know, we're starting to get a lot. We got our podcast and things like that. So if they want to listen to previous shows, but this is, you know, it's fun doing something different here. So,
all right. So let's talk about 401k and IRAs. And basically, usually we're taught, we're really not taught, but we go to work for a company. We're like encouraged to get into a 401k. What would be your recommendation and percentages depending on company matches? And then what contributes to an IRA?
So I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I had an appointment with a couple, and they had about $300,000 in their retirement account, and then they had some other money outside of their retirement that was sitting. And so the first thing I talk about is this, you know, the 401k is, or 403b in the case with what we were talking yesterday, that's for like nonprofits or if you're at a hospital, school teacher, something like that. Those are a couple of your corporately sponsored retirement plans. Then you have other plans that you can do. If you're a self-employed individual, you can do, if you're mostly an independent contractor with maybe very few employees, you can do a SEP. All right, it's called a simplified employee pension plan. A SEP IRA is what they call it. You can do also a solo 401k as an independent contractor. You have individual IRA accounts, individual retirement account is what an IRA stands for. And then you have some that you can deduct and some that you can, that are Roth. So I met yesterday. And first thing I did was we looked at taking the money that was there. They were in the early, like, 60s, and making sure that – I always look, if I meet with someone, the first thing I do when they're near retirement, I said, what – and they're in their 10-year range. I said, let's take a look at what you have and look at what it's going to grow to, and then let's look at what you're able to invest over the next 10 years or however many years to retirement. And let's see what is going to be the most important piece of the puzzle, what you already have or what you have in the future that you're going to invest. And if you're doing a reasonably good job, it's always what you already have. And so then we start looking at allocating that differently, a little more conservative. So we might go into something 60-40 stock and bond or 75-25 stock and bond. But then when they start investing the new money, we are very aggressive. And when I say very aggressive, we're going to if someone right now is out there, you're not working with an advisor, I tell them to choose the target date funds. And so what a target date is you would take your birth year. So in the case with me, 61, for easy math, you take my birth if I was born in 1960, and then you add 65 to it, and it would be a 2025 target. And then what happens is, if you were born in 2000, all right, you're in your 20s now, you would take 65 and you would look at a 2065 target. And what these funds do inside your retirement plans, they will manage your money based on your age. So they're when you're a 2065 right now, you're going to have a mostly stock, you know, 90%+ stock. You have a long time horizon. But if you're a 2025, the target date, it's already moved into about 60% bonds. All right. And you didn't have to do anything. Yeah. And so we do that as an avenue on how to choose. And so yesterday I met with a client, and we took their lump sum and we backed it off a little bit. And then, but on their new money, we're betting on more volatility, and we bought into, even though they're in their 60s, to a 2065, deal. And so what happens on your IRAs, you've got two types of IRAs. Mm-hmm. You've got a, or 401k, traditional, which is deductible. So when you put your money in, you're going to get a tax deduction. Typically, if you're young, getting started, I might choose the Roth portion, which is after tax and tax-free, versus a traditional is pre-tax and tax-deferred. You have to pay the taxes later. You have what's called an RMD, when you're 73 that you have to take a required minimum distribution. So when you're looking at your retirement plans and your IRAs, that paycheck you can put in your 401k up to about a little over 20,000 if you're under 50, over 30,000 if you're in your 50s. And then you get matching funds. Typically, I always tell people at the very minimum, you got to be getting your match. It's free money.
Right.
You know, so if you put in 6% of your paycheck and you get matched 3, that is free money. And then the 3 goes in and you don't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the 6 is a deduction. So you might save 2.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take 6 and you have a 2% tax savings, so that you put in net 4 out of your pocket and the match gives you 9. So if someone handed you, you know, if you handed someone $4 and they handed you back 9,
right?
That's good.
That's
but
good.
But guess what? I see people all the time that don't do it.
They don't do it.
They're not involved. They're not doing their 401k, and it's literally free money. The other mistake I see with the accumulation side is that they think that they can put, you know, that 6% is their number. It's not. Your number is about 20,000.
Yeah, they set it every year or until they change it or
whatever. Yeah. So it just got bumped up again.
And then it depends on, doesn't it depend on like how you claim, if you have dependents, things like
that? No, it's not really that. The difference is your deduction.
Your deduction. Okay?
And then also if your income is up, another little secret that a lot of people don't know about is something called a backdoor Roth. So if you're making it's around 220,
is that
combined. Well, so a backdoor Roth, a Roth is tax-free. It's an after-tax investment, tax-free growth, and you never have to withdraw on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to it's inherited tax-free. So a backdoor is when you earn, when you're eligible for a 401k and you do it, but your income hits over the limits. All right, generally it's about 220, give or take, married. And so when you hit over the limits, you are ineligible to do a Roth, but you can do a backdoor. And what the backdoor is you open up a traditional IRA,
mm-hmm.
and we convert it the next day to a Roth. And so that's a way for someone that's a high income earner to put additional money away in retirement
without
plans.
Without having to pay taxes.
They're paying taxes on the it's an after-tax investment, but then that money grows, you know, tax-free.
As you roll it into the Roth, right?
Yeah, because it went to the Roth. So anyway, so that would be, you know, when I'm meeting with people, I just start listing. So all right, number one, let's look at your Social Security. What are you going to get? When are we going to draw it?
Mm-hmm.
And we do that. And then we look at all their retirement accounts, and we say, all right, what can we, you know, safe money is pull 4% plus a 3% increase, or another way you can pull is you can take, you know, each year, like if you have a good year, typically you spend more money than if you have a bad year.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at year-end values setting up. So when I meet with people, I meet, you know, once a year, and we would determine, A, where we pull it from. Do we pull it from the stock portion, the bond portion, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And then we look, like if we have a market decline, I may tell someone, say, look, you know, let's tighten up a little bit so we can allow some of your money to, you know, recover and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. All right, well, we got to take a break. We were talking about retirement paychecks. We have covered Social Security, your 401k, IRAs. Coming up next, right here on Real Money Radio with Tony Esquivel, Roy Matlock Jr., we've got your home, including reverse mortgages. So we're going to dive into some real estate.
Very good. Stay with us. All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we are Real Money Radio, and I'm here with my co-host, Tanya Esquivel, and we've talked a little bit about some paychecks that you are getting when you retire. And one of the keys that I've always said is you want to have multiple income streams. And so far we've talked about Social Security. If you're just tuning in, you go to realmoneyradio.info. All right. I can't think this morning. And you can get our podcast, and we talked about Social Security, when to draw it, how it works, different things like that. We also talked about 401ks and IRAs. And so now we're going to get into Tanya's, you know, neck of the woods, we'll call it.
Passion.
Your passion.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the home, the reverse mortgages, and some rental properties as income streams. So, Tanya?
Yeah. So I think a lot of times when I look at investing in real estate, and if you're looking at downsizing, one of the things that I think a lot of people are confused or don't really understand, I think it's more of a lack of education, is reverse mortgages strategies. So what I see on my side is I'll see, you know, say a baby boomer, they own their house free and clear. They're going to sell it and they're going to downsize.
Right.
But they want to pay cash.
Right.
Because they don't want a mortgage. To where the reverse mortgage frees up that extra cash so you don't have to pay off your house, but you can also eliminate a mortgage payment too.
Right.
Because if that money is just sitting in your home, it's not being reinvested and it's not growing.
Right.
And that is what the reverse mortgage opportunities can give you to diversify your real estate, get rid of your mortgage payment, because I know you're on a limited income at that point, but also have that extra money that you didn't put down and strategize with you, Roy, and how to get keep it growing.
Right, right. So, you know, when I look at,
growth, if you do that, you've got growth on your side, and then you've got growth with appreciation, hopefully,
right,
on the real estate.
So one of the things that when I meet with people, I always kind of categorize, you know, and if you're out there listening right now and you're at or near retirement, you know if you're behind, all right? If you're either behind, you're doing okay, or you're well beyond okay. And everybody has different goals. I mean, if you're behind, inheritances are not the goal. The goal is food, all right, and being able to not run out of money. If you're doing okay, you have children or you have different goals that you want to leave money behind, you have that opportunity to where you can, you know, do that. And then for people that are in great shape, it's a different deal. So where I see the reverse mortgage coming in and the downsizing, I just go back and I look at different scenarios. So had a client that had an $800,000 house that was paid for.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is it was kind of, they had some yard and stuff and they were getting older and they didn't want to fool with it. All right. So that was it was kind of becoming a hassle.
Yeah.
So they could go and they were going to downsize. So they did. And they bought like a condo and they really bought into this area. That's like a community.
55 plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of deal. And it was about 400,000. All right. So that 400,000. So think like this, they had 800 in their hand, mm-hmm, when they sold the house, and then they went and bought something for 400.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a couple ways they could do it. One is they could do a traditional mortgage and have a payment, but they are not going to want a payment when they didn't have a payment.
Right.
All right. So they didn't do that. The other is they could have paid cash, so they could take their 800, turn it into 400. Or we went down the route of doing a reverse mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And the reverse mortgage was they put about 240 down and they had no payment.
Mm-hmm.
So that freed them up almost 600, and we took that 600 and we were able to turn it into about 35,000 a year in additional retirement income, and they still have no payment.
Yeah.
All right. Now, one of the things that I hear people all the time talk about, they say, yeah, but I lose my house. No, you don't lose your house. You have a mortgage on your house. If when you take that reverse mortgage, it's really an optional payment mortgage. You know, you can pay the interest on it if you wanted to, but you're not required to. But what happens is the mortgage company is like an annuity is what it is. They know a certain number of people are going to live for a long time. A certain number of people are going to die soon. And overall, what they do is they have a no recourse. So if your house actually is worth less than the mortgage, it doesn't go against your estate.
Mm-mm.
All right. So that means you outlived the mortgage, and it actually grew bigger than the house was worth. So you're able to get more than your equity out. Then what happens? You say, yeah, but I lost my home and I can't. Well, if you were in a situation where you're behind, our goal was not for you to leave your home as an inheritance. Our goal was to get you able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if you're in the middle where why would you do a reverse mortgage? So I always tell people when they retire, there's certain things that we use that the goal is for them to have no value. There's other things we use with the idea that that's the inheritance. So if I meet, I'll give you another example of a client I met with, and they were in a situation where they had their house paid for, all right, and another downsized deal, And we decided that we were going to take a portion of their money and stick it into an annuity. All right. And an annuity will give them, in that case, about 8% lifetime income guarantee. So they're able to get the most income without worrying about ever running out of money. They also had Social Security. And then we took the reverse mortgage and we downsized that. And so the house, we said the house and the annuities are going to be not our inheritance products.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But that enabled them, because we reduced their cash flow,
to have the lifestyle that they
needed. They could do everything they needed out of the reverse mortgage, no payment, and the annuity and Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
That left them about $700,000 that we put into a growth type investment. It was about an 80-20 stock bond. And based on historical returns, that money's going to double about every 7 years. So if they live for another 20 years, that seven goes to 1.4 to 2.8 to, you know, to 5.6. And it also gives them the buffer if, as inflation kicks in. So we decided the house and, you know, quite frankly, let me tell you what happens. Everybody I know, when they inherit a house,
They sell it. Yeah.
Okay. It's not like they're all with a family home. No, they don't. They sell it. And so in this case, you sell it still. There may be a little equity left in it, or it may not be any, but the equity that they're going to get, I can tell you right now, my family, my mom and dad have passed away, and we all received a nice mutual fund account as an inheritance. And I didn't say to myself, well, I'm mad. Okay. I wanted a house. Okay.
Right.
No, I wanted, you know, when you get the money, you get the money. So anyway, so that's some ideas.
You want to do what you want with the money. And that's why they sell the house. Because especially if there's multiple kids and things like that.
So reverse mortgages have a place, you know, just like any other product. If they're used, you can use, I've seen people use reverse mortgages to convert their IRA to a Roth, which allows them to have tax-free income and stuff like that. So let's talk about rental properties.
Yes. So rental properties, you've got two different paths that you can take on rental properties. You can do long-term rental and you can do short-term rental. So those are two different avenues are popular now. So long-term rental means I'm going to do the traditional lease. I'm going to buy a piece of property. I'm going to have a tenant for 6, 12, 24 months, whatever you work out in a lease agreement. But that tenant's going to be there. Short-term rental is going to be your platforms, Airbnb, Vrbo, where they come in and short-term here in Davidson County is going to be 30 days or less. And so you have to get a permit for that. So you have to make sure that your property will allow a short-term rental one.
Right.
But those are income streams that you can use now versus in the past. You know, we didn't have the Airbnb, Vrbo platforms the way that we do now. So I think having a combination of both of those is good. So, for example, if you are in Davidson County, where I know the story from your dad and I see a lot of investors, they don't go in and buy the really expensive homes. They buy the location.
Right.
And they buy the homes that they feel are going to appreciate. And so they're sometimes what we consider maybe a Class C type home, like you do apartment buildings. They don't go in for the Class A. They want a property that they know if the market turns or shift, they can still rent it, basically.
Right.
So that's your long-term. Your short-term, you know, think about short-term from just a lifestyle, too. You could, let's say that you travel to this one vacation area all the time. I'll just use 30A Destin area.
Right.
Why go and rent every single 2 to 3 times a year that you go down there? That could be a good short-term rental from you, just because that is a travel destination. So you're able to get your permits easier than say you would in Davidson County.
Got it.
And you get more revenue and more return on the short-term rental. And plus it helps pay for your vacation.
Yeah. So you're getting free vacation.
Appreciation factor that a lot of people I don't think about.
So what we're going to do, I want to keep talking about that when we come back. And we've got just a few more ideas. We're going to finish rentals and maybe get into some guaranteed income type things and then business income. Kind of finish things off. You're listening to Real Money Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Real Money Radio. If you would like to listen to our shows, our previous shows, we kicked this off. I'm Tanya Escobel, Roy Matlock Jr., my co-host. I think end of January, 1st of February, but go to realmoneyradio.info and you can check out our podcast on there. Also, there is a link if you want to know more about building financial wealth and things we've talked about today. Roy's information's on there, or if it's real estate, I'm on there as well. So go check us out, realmoneyradio.info. We are talking about today retirement paychecks, and we've covered Social Security being number one. Number two, your 401k IRA. We went into your home, reverse mortgage strategies that actually gives you diversity. So you're not just putting all your money into your home that's not getting reinvested. And also you can eliminate a payment too. So if you'd like more information on that, again, go realmoneyradio.info. Rental real estate. That is where we just left off. We were talking about long-term rental and then what we call short-term rental income.
Yeah. So when, you know, some of the, I've never done any kind of short-term rental. I know about short-term rental. I know people like you have done it. Mm-hmm. So really, a long-term rental would be traditional rental property. A short-term rental, you made a comment about it. You know, it's a way that if you love going to Destin, then you turn around and buy something down there. Mm-hmm. But you made the comment, too, that it's easier to get permits in vacation areas.
Yeah, because they want to attract tourists.
Yeah.
And I would think that Davidson County would want to be that way, but some of our, because we are what, number one or number two for bachelorette destination or whatever.
Yeah.
I know we're at least in the top five. I've not checked it lately. However, I think what we had is some residential communities did not want to lose the residential feel and didn't want a lot of tourists. So what the city did is they changed the permitting. However, there's a lot of new developments that actually are zoned commercial where you can STR those all the time.
And that's short-term rental.
That STR. Is short-term rental. And that's going to be probably more of your condo type short-term rental.
So what you're looking for in a so you don't make mistakes on that. Ideally, you want to look at what you just said, that it's rezoned STR.
Especially if you're, no matter what market you're doing, you want to find out what the STR requirements are, the short-term rental requirements, because every city has a different code, a different requirement.
Yeah, it's not like you can just buy a property and then the next thing you know, start doing that.
Basically, you're turning it into a hotel, so you got to know what codes is.
Yeah, and if you do that, here's what will happen. Your neighbors will make sure that you just get killed.
Yes, exactly.
They may take you out, and so.
I think it depends on the area that you buy into. I know there's a lot of investors that go to like Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. To me, those homes are overpriced. And your clientele that come in seem to be a little bit lower clientele in most cases.
Right.
So you get a little bit more damage on your properties. And also you probably cannot charge as much per night.
Right.
So we did a cabin on the Smoky Mountains on the North Carolina side in Whittier. Mm-hmm. So it's a private gate community. I think there's only 17 homes in there.
Okay.
So again, in the Smoky Mountains, it's the number one travel destination in the United States. It's just you got to be strategic with it and not overpay for a home. So we went to that side of it just because we did not want to be in all the traffic. We didn't want to overpay for the home either. So it's about 50% less on the North Carolina side than on
Tennessee. If you've got the ability to do short-term rental, how much more are you paying for a typical property that versus a similar property that didn't have that? What would you think?
We didn't pay any different for it.
Really?
You just have to make sure the neighborhood allows it.
Okay. So it even though it is considered more of a rental,
cash income,
cash property. So there's an idea in itself.
I think the only risk that I would say, just because I've been doing short-term rentals for 10 years now, the only risk that you have is if you are in an HOA. So for example, my Davidson County, I'm not an HOA, so I don't really have to worry about that. Florida, we have an HOA. Every single from Memorial Day through Labor Day, we've got probably 5 to 7 old timers that's been in there that cannot stand the short term rent.
And they're wanting to change the HOA.
They're wanting to change the HOA. So we literally go through it every single year. Now, what I do think is, and this is my personal opinion, if you do change the HOA in that community, you're going to hurt your property values.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's going to go down.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, why do they not understand that?
Because they're not.
And it's usually just a handful of people. So I deal with that. in Whittier, North Carolina, there's no codes. There's nothing. You rent it. Now, the only thing we have to think about is our HOA there is a very small group. And so you've got some retirement people, but they also know that they want to keep their values and stuff too. And so they don't ever complain about the SCRs unless there's a noise issue or something like that.
But
I've never had a complaint in Whittier, North Carolina. And we've had that for about 4 years.
So you got
years.
Basically strategic, you know, it's just like anything else. If you, want to buy a house, you get a real estate agent that has some skill sets, negotiations, mm-hmm. and they know the area mm-hmm. and you come out better. I've always, you know, a lot of people, they try to sell their house on their own. And I've said this for many, many years. You can't both save the money.
Right.
All right. You know, and we've talked, you know this. And, you know, if you try to sell your house yourself, the buyer says, well, mm-hmm. I'm going to save the commission. Okay. Yeah. If, you know, so that kind of thing goes on. So when you're out there, you know, looking at stuff like this, I would just say get a good
You have to get realtor. A good real estate agent that understands how to check codes and stuff for you too.
And it's like anything else. There's A players and there's D players mm-hmm. in every business, you know. And the good news in our type of business, in the real estate business and financial advisor mortgage business, mm-hmm. if we're no good, we usually get out of we're usually gone.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can tell if somebody's been around for 20 years and they're still doing stuff, chances are they're probably pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And there's some strategies when it comes to the long-term side too. I think having both would be a good plan for your retirement. Again, it goes back to what's your location, what's your rate of return, what is your vacancy rate? And those are all things that we can help them talk through and strategize through.
Right.
If they want to go to our website. And
So
let us help.
So in hitting this, so we've hit four areas. We've got a couple more. So if you have ideas about buying those properties, mm-hmm. you can get with Tanya and do two things. One is she can refer you to the right realtor. And number two, put the financing on it that would make sense and run the numbers and stuff like that. So anyway.
Yeah, realmoneyradio.info. All right, so we've got two more paychecks, guaranteed lifetime income and business and part-time income.
Yeah, so guaranteed lifetime income, I'll give you, it's an annuity. And I have people that I hate annuities, all right? Well, annuities are a product. You know, I meet with people typically, if you're a high net worth and you have plenty of money, you're probably not going to have me recommend an annuity, mm-hmm. all right, because you don't need to, mm-hmm. all right? So the whole idea is you take your income and you say to yourself, how much do I need to get off of my lump sum, my asset, to be able to provide me enough income to be able to live? Mm-hmm. An annuity for someone as a retiree will give you the most amount of income mm-hmm. per year that you can count on.
So is that the more conservative approach than in the stock market? Or
it's more it is conservative, but it's designed to protect against living too long.
Okay.
All right, and so the idea is when you buy an annuity will give you a pension mm-hmm. is an annuity. Social Security is an annuity. And it pays as long as you live.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the challenges that people run into is they outlive their money. All right. And with all the modern medical and stuff like that, of course, we're going to live to be like 150. And so if we live, you know, forever, we don't want to, you know, it'd be bad to live to 150 but you ran out of money when you're 80. Okay. Mm-hmm. That'd be bad. So people buy annuities with that intention, not with an intention there's going to be a inheritance. We use the rental properties could be inheritances mm-hmm. because they're income properties. You've got your retirement plans if they're invested in the stock market and so on. The idea is that. So that's, I tell people annuities are for people that are on the borderline or behind, and for people that are wealthy. We're not going to talk about annuities for income mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So,
I think we're pretty much out of time on our business and part-time income. We might have to add that into our next show.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to Real Money Radio. I'm Tanya Escobel here with Rory Matlock Jr., my co-host. You can check us out, realmoneyradio.info, for future shows and podcasts. Have a blessed week.